It is time for the Home Improvement Show with the president of Renalco himself, Walter Assey. I am Joanne Brackus. We are taking your questions and your text messages, 514-790-0800. If you have a question for Walter, he will most likely have the answers. Good morning, Walter. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. You know, we have to remember it's a coast-to-coast program.
Yes, now, right? And that's why you heard me hiccup because, you know, we never know what time of day this airs, where you're at. So wherever you're at, whatever time of day it's at, we hope you're doing well.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
How was your week?
My week was fabulous.
Yeah.
I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, you know. You tend to sometimes ADD when you have so many things going on at the same time. But I think
you were on no sleep for a while.
I'm still on no sleep. Oh, but I think my body just got used to it now, right?
Walter's not even awake. He's just on. He's a robot. No, you know what's crazy is you had how many calls do you estimate with the floods?
We touched the 4,000 and 4,000. Plus. I lost count now. But what I'm doing now What I'm doing now is very similar to what happened during the emergency. So now what I do is we attack areas in bulk. So, for example, this week we're going to do like Beaconsfield, Pontclair, Kirkland.
Okay.
So these are going to be our areas.
More efficient instead of spreading
it
thin.
So that way we'll finish area at a time and then we get to people way faster, I find. First of all, it's travel and geography, right? So when your reps is 2 minutes away from each appointment, you get to see a lot more and you don't have to be stuck in traffic rather than, you know, be all over the place. I find it works very well. And, you know, when we go to an area, we really get it done pretty quickly and efficiently.
4,000 plus calls. Let's get to a call. Reminder, 514-790-0800. Text in your questions. Call us. We've got Robert on the line, and Robert has a problem with a basement heated floor. Robert, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm looking to redo my basement. I got flooded, so I'm considering putting ceramics instead of a laminated floor, just in the event that it were to happen again. Mm-hmm. I think the cost would be a lot less. But I want to put a heated floor under the ceramics. Now, I was looking at the Schluter system, the Ditra. I think that's the only electric system that's available. My concern is, will I be losing a lot of heat to my slab? My slab is not insulated. My house was built in '86, so I doubt it was insulated.
Go ahead.
What are your recommendations or what are your thoughts on that?
So when you install a DITRA system, you are installing a DITRA membrane, or we call it DITRA heat, right, that goes on the slab. And then from there, you're going to be putting your heated wires. And on top of that, you're going to be putting the putty for the wire protection. And then you're going to put the cement glue and the ceramic. So that DITRA membrane that you're installing on your slab is going to cut a lot of the humidity that's coming out of the slab. So that should not be an issue. Now, if you find that this is a real issue because your slab is 2 inches in thickness and it is very humid really usually and what have you, what you could do is you could go with hydroponic heating. So now, you know, you're heating with hot water rather than electric heated wires. So that's another option.
There's a thermal blank membrane that could be put, or is there another insulation?
Well, your DITRA membrane, because the issue is you have to be very careful with one thing. Whatever you want to be putting has to be waterproof, or else you're defying the whole purpose of you installing ceramic on slab. The reason you're doing it is because if you have another flood, you don't want to have to rip the floor out. So in case you put ceramic on a type of a membrane that will cut the humidity that is susceptible to absorb and retain water, then you're actually doing it the wrong way because, you know, you're spending all this money for nothing. So the DITRA membrane tend to help cut the humidity a lot. And it will be your best possible solution in this particular case.
Okay, so would there be a loss of heat that will go down to the slab?
You should not have that happen, no. And, you know, even if there is, technically. It's a low voltage, and it takes a lot. It doesn't take a lot of energy. That's what I like about heated floors. It's not, you know, it takes a lot less energy than, you know, electric baseboards or the conventional way that we do things. So it's an efficient way to heat. And we all know that hot air rises. And so the fact that you have the heater coming from the floor upwards, you can't get it any better than that.
Okay.
It's uniform. It's from the floor. It's usually hot air tends to go up. It doesn't go down. So I don't see a problem with that efficiency-wise at all.
Okay, so the thermal block, you don't recommend that only because it won't be waterproof in the event there's another water
filtration. Well, anything that is rubberized or have a spongy feel to it will not really serve you well. The other thing is your DITRA heat requires a very flat surface. So whether it's concrete or plywood, to adhere and glue properly, so you can put the ceramic on top of it. So any membrane underneath it that tends to move or vibrate is going to be very bad for your ceramic.
So the DITRA system has to be glued to the concrete floor.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, Robert, does that help you?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day. We've got a question on the text line. Reminder, 514-7... Look at me, lost my voice. 514-790-0800 is the text line, the phone number line. Of course, Walter Essie here, president of Renofco, is taking your questions. Here's a question. For Walter, we have a backflow water valve, and after the big rainstorm a few weeks ago, there was a small amount of water in the sleeve under the cover of the access to the valve. Why would there be water there, and is it possible that something needs to be checked, inspected, or repaired? Thank you so much. They did not leave a name.
So, I mean, the issue with backwater valves, it's not a foolproof system. There's a lot of things that go around it that needs to be checked and rechecked. Number one, and just to simplify it, if you do have a backwater system that have not been cleaned or maintained in a while, the flap might get stuck open. And in this case, depend on the degree of how... where it was stuck open, was it stuck at 5%, 10%, or at 100%, that's going to determine how much water you could potentially have back.
But is this something they can check by themselves? Or do
100%.
They need to...
Okay. So it has to be accessible, and you have to at least once a year check it out, clean it, make sure there's no debris in it and everything else that goes with that. But more importantly, in a storm... if you use your water from your house, the water, and there's water backing up from the city, the pressure of the water from the city will always win, and water will back up to your home. So the trick is, if you do have a backwater valve and you're looking outside and it's pouring cats and dogs, do not use the water as long as you can.
So
in your home.
Again,
as soon as
that starts to happen, you just stop completely.
As soon as you see that, I mean, I'm not talking about the usual rainfalls. I'm saying, okay, this looks a bit out of the ordinary. And you know, you see there's starting to be accumulation on the streets. And anything that, like those telltale signs that something is going wrong.
Which we now know how to recognize.
Exactly. Believe me, you'll know. So when we have important accumulation, that's a key, and in a short period of time. So when you hear, for example, a weather forecast saying, okay, you're going to have 50 millimeters in 1 hour, that's not.
So when you say stop using all the water, that's no flushing toilets, no showers, no drinking.
I mean, you can drink,
but
you can't, you know.
You can't pee afterwards is what you were trying to say.
And if you do, just don't flush.
Okay, hold that thought. I want to remind everyone, 514-790-0800. Start sending in your text messages and your calls for Walter Essie, president of Renofco. This is the Home Improvement Show, and sitting in front of me is Walter Essie, president of Renofco. I'm Joanne Brackus, and together we are taking your questions. 514-790-0800 is the phone line. You can also send in your text messages for your questions for Walter, and the calls are coming in. A reminder, if you are calling in, turn your radio off, otherwise we can't hear you. I can only hear myself. Okay, question here. Hello. My question for Walter, what are his thoughts and opinions on epoxying a basement floor in lieu of a vinyl floor, especially post-flood, I'm guessing?
Yeah. So, I mean, there is advantages and disadvantages for both ideas. The idea of epoxy floor, if you want to do it, number one, you want to self-level first, because you cannot have, you know, dips and valleys on your cement slab. You might see it a bit less now, but as soon as you're going to put your furniture back, you're going to say, whoa, that table is crooked or what have you. So you have to look at that first. The second thing you want to look at is the level of humidity in your basement. Epoxy is not going to cut any of the humidity that's coming out of the slab. So that might be an issue. And the way you want to know that, you're going to know that is it's the age of the slab itself. So if the house was built in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, there's a very good chance there was no geotextile installed before they installed, before they poured the slab, which means a lot of the humidity is going to come out from the slab itself. If you're using your basement on short-term basis, that might work. But if you really use and abuse your basement,
like if it's a family room or whatever.
That's right. So you're going to need to very aggressively dehumidify to keep things, if you wish, not musty and comfortable for you to be in the basement for a long period of time. You want to do a radon gas testing as well, because, you know, again, if you have a subfloor, that helps sometimes cutting the radon. If you have any radon gas issues, that will help tremendously to cut it. If you do have radon, then you're going to get rid of it before you actually do the epoxy. So the vinyl, there are vinyls that are reusable. And all what you have to do is you know, if you have a water damage, you take them out, you wipe them, you disinfect them, you can put them right back, which is an advantage. So it kind of gives you a bit of a warmer feel and softer feel to, you know, to the touch.
Versus the epoxy.
Versus just the epoxy, right? Right.
Which is its own style. Some people like it, but for the basement, it's very cold-ish.
It's cold. I mean, again, if you want this to be a comfortable environment, you don't want it to smell. You don't want it humid, and you want it to be as comfy and as cozy as possible.
Yeah.
So in the winter, it might be a bit, you might need to throw a few rugs here and there to make it
rugs
a bit,
for everyone. We have Nick on the line. Nick, can you hear us?
Yes, I could. Could you hear me?
Yes. Take it away, Nick.
Okay. Good morning, first of all, Joanne and Walter. So, I have a sewer thing in my garage, which I don't know what it is, and I opened it up, and there's all kinds of gunk in it, like really thick gunk. So, question one, what is that sewer? And question two, how do I get rid of that gunk, or do I have to call a professional company to do it?
Oof, gunk.
What did you open exactly to...
It's like there's like a sewer in my garage. Like I call it a sewer.
You mean
sewer.
A drain?
A drain. Okay, let's call it a drain. Yeah.
So, I mean, that could, because here's the thing. It's very possible, and I'm not saying it's 100% the case, is it's not sewer. Because if it's sewer, you would have smelled it. What happens in a lot of these garage drains, the piping itself or the drainage itself is higher up in the pit. So if you were to remove it and look where the pipe or the drain is located, it's usually closer to the top. So what happens is the pit will fill up and it gets to a point where it's high enough that the water will drain away. So when you come in the winter and you know, with your car and the snow and the salt and, you know, the mud, a lot of that debris falls into the pit itself, okay? And probably what you're seeing is years and years of accumulation of that. I mean, that pit technically have to be cleaned at least once a year, especially after the winter months. In order for you to clean it, there's many ways. All of it will involve a wet shop vac. So it's a hose, a wet shop vac. And then you can throw in some bleach in order to make sure that everything is disinfected in the pit itself. But yeah, it's really water, hose, shop vac, and that's it. But if, you know, when you start doing it on a yearly basis, at least once a year, you're going to see it's going to take you a lot less time. It's important for you to have it cleaned up, because you don't want that every time water goes into the pit, it's grabbing that debris and taking it with it to the drain. Eventually, you're going to have a partially blocked drain or a fully blocked drain, which you don't want.
So what exactly is that? Is it like in case the garage gets flooded? Because there is just kind of a... pipe in there.
Yeah, so I mean, it is a drain. So most of the time when you're using your garage, especially in the winter months, let's say you don't even wash your car in the garage, but if it's snowing outside and there's 30, 40 centimeters of snow and you're driving and you come in and you have a whole bunch of snow on your car and your tires, that, you know, that water melts, it needs to go somewhere. And that's what the drain is there. If you wash your car in the garage, if you wash the garage floor itself, you want the water to go somewhere. So it's simply what you want to call a floor drain, really.
Okay, and by the way, I'm Italian. We don't put our cars in the garage.
I did not know that, Nick. Okay. Is it a tempo? Are we talking tempo?
No, we're talking a real garage.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that, Nick.
Okay.
514-790-0800 is the text line, and of course the phone line. We have time for a quick question here from the text line. It says, can you unglaze porcelain tile, kitchen tile, and already, sorry, can an unglazed porcelain tile be sealed, kitchen tile, and already installed? It's always dirty, and I tried various cleaning methods, and nothing is working. All this is a few months old, so can you unglaze? Can unglazed porcelain tile be sealed?
Yes, it can.
How?
With a sealer. With a tile sealer. That's simple.
That's from Tony, who I'm guessing maybe also Italian. So, okay. So it can be. You could just see that there's no problem there. And it's only a few months old. Does that make a difference? No?
No, it doesn't make a difference. The main thing you want to ensure that there's no grout residue left over from when they applied the grout, so the seal can adhere properly to it. But yeah, you can.
But Tony, there is your answer. Again, 514-790-0800. This is the Home Improvement Show. Get your questions in for Walter Assey, president of Renovco. We're having a grand old time here at the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackison. Walter Assey is sitting in front of me, as he always does, here to take your questions on your renovations, your repairs, your problems, not psychological, just for your house, for now, unless you have a hidden degree that you've...
Sometimes psychological, you know. You have to play a therapist.
There's a lot of hand-holding that you have to do.
In home renovations, there's always psychology involved.
Yeah. There is psychology and a lot of repair, and sometimes tears, which we try to avoid. Why? And this is why we have Walter Assey here. 514-790-0800. Call us or text us. If you do text us, please add in your name. We like to know who you are talking to. We've got Marie on the line. Marie is having an issue with a balcony at a condo she's looking at. Marie, take it away.
Oh, hello. Hello, Joanne and Walter. So we are thinking of downsizing, and we're looking at condos. And on the balcony of this condo, there's two pairs of structure. So one, as you come into the condo, it's facing you. Those are inside the balcony. And one, so the pair is made of one that's about 1 foot high, and the other one right beside is about 3 feet high. And then to the side wall of the balcony, again on the inside, the same kind of thing, a shorter one and a taller one. The real estate agent thought it was something to do with drainage of the water and the snow and when it comes into the balcony, but those things are sealed. So I don't understand how the water or the snow could go into those things. At least they seem to be sealed to us. And so my husband was thinking perhaps it's some kind of support system for the balcony. So we wanted to have your opinion. What do you think those mysterious structures on the balcony are? And they come into the balcony for about, I would say, maybe 5 to 6 inches inside the balcony. And they are wide each. The small one is about 6 inch wide and the taller one about 6 inch wide. And then again on the other side. six inch.
Walter, are you getting the description?
I am. I mean, we're going to go with the process of elimination, okay? It is for sure not a drain, like for sure. You don't have you don't need four structures to create a drain for a balcony.
Okay.
So that you can eliminate. And usually a drain is lower, not higher than a structure. So it being a drain and being higher does not make sense whatsoever. That's number one. Number two, structure, again, it's highly unlikely because anything that is structure, you want it to be below the balcony floor if it's holding the balcony up, not above it. If anything, putting it above it is creating more weight. So I don't particularly agree with those two types of scenarios. I don't know what else they could be. If you send me a picture, it will be a lot more, it will give me a bit more, you know, if you want, comprehension of what's going on. I highly doubt it's decorative because from what you're explaining to me, they don't look good at all, right?
No, well, they're transparent but it's well done. It's not pleasant to have it there, but we were wondering what they're there for. Now, I'm not 20 years old, so to send you a picture, I could do it.
Oh, Marie. Marie.
You can take your time. I can definitely chat off air. It's not a problem.
Yeah. I'm talking on my cell phone and the pictures are on my iPad. Yeah. So I could send you, after I talk to you now, perhaps I could send you the picture. You could look at it. And if you have time on air, you could see the answer. And if not, well.
Yeah, here's what we'll do, Marie. Jimmy will try to sort of figure that out with you and hopefully we'll get an answer. Jimmy, nod if that's what. Jimmy's nodding. Jimmy is nodding. So, Marie, thank you for your call. We will try to get to the bottom of this for you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, have a little chat there with Jimmy. Okay. Thank you. Anthony's been waiting on the line. Anthony has questions about sub pumps. Anthony, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
Hi, good morning. I'm looking for not necessarily a sump pump because my basement doesn't have a sump pump, but I do get water infiltration sometimes through windows like the last flood we had. And I'm looking for a utility pump that will suck water that's not that deep, like under an inch or half an inch. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these utility pumps, they say that they need at least an inch and a half of water to start to work. Is there anything else that I can use?
I mean, you want to get the smallest possible size pump. The efficiency is not going to be as strong as you want it to be.
Right.
And the attachment is a garden hose rather than, you know, the inch and a half pipes that will discharge the water.
Right.
So, you know, the only issue is if your window well gets filled up pretty fast, it might not supply in the case of a freak storm. But these small pumps like Deco Pro makes some of these, they are better in sucking smaller amount of water than the bigger ones. Because just the circumference is much smaller. So they tend to pump water at, you know, a lower level. So I would look in the Deco Pro. Okay. I would look into the Red Line as well, have few. The other thing I would look into is you're fixing your window well drainage.
Correct. That's really
where you want to go at. As if you fix the drainage, then that use of the pump is going to become less important with time.
Right. Okay, so a smaller pump versus these half power or half horsepower or...
Yes, exactly. And fix your window well. Trust me, it's not as complicated as you think, but it will do you a lot of good.
Anthony, thank you very much.
Anthony, thank you for that. Hope that helps. We have a text message coming in. Reminder, 514-790-0800 for your calls and your text messages. This is from Leonie. I hope I didn't butcher that. Leonie asks, how can I remove extra varnish from my hardwood floor without damaging it?
Light sanding. Light sanding, you wanna, that's one way. I mean, you have strippers of varnish that you can apply, but you have to be very careful.
I was gonna say that sounds like a disaster. The beginnings of a disaster.
No, but I mean, it is tender love and care type of a job. You don't want to sand in the same area for a long time because you tend to overheat the wood, and that's not what you want. But anything with light sanding, light grit, sandpaper would work.
Okay. Then I have another one here. This is interesting. Hi, Walter. I live in a 2-story house in Beaconsfield, and I'm extremely frustrated by woodpeckers. Mm-hmm. Woody woodpecker, causing 2.5-inch holes on the second floor in the 3-inch styrofoam style siding. Do you have any tips on how to deter or protect from woodpecker attacks? Is that considered an attack? Do you have any contacts that can help with the problem or who can help install screens to protect the siding? This is from Derek.
Okay. So before I would call professional help and spend money, I can give him an easier trick and not very costly.
And it's not harming the birds. We can't harm the birds.
And it's not harming the birds. Mm. No, especially not a woodpecker.
Woody woodpecker.
Yeah.
What was the song? Da-da-da-da. Yeah.
Try reflective tape. So they don't like that. If you were to install in the area that they're coming, reflective tape, you know, that kind of mirror like
tape. Yeah, like what you put on your kids before Halloween.
That's correct. That should work in a lot of the cases. The other thing that I'm a bit confused about, because usually woodpeckers like to like when they are on a tree and they are like attacking the tree or whatever you want to call it,
pecking.
They usually peck at something that is rotting.
Oh.
Or that is sick. Because what they do is they want to try to get the
bugs.
The bugs out of it and what have you. Very seldom they'll go to something that is not...
Walter's eyebrows are getting furrowed. Are you suspecting that there's something going on
there? I am saying it's worse for him to investigate. Is there, you know, did he have a water damage or some water ingress that he's not aware of that he needs to investigate? To get rid of the animal itself, we'll start with the reflective tape.
And then investigate.
And then we'll investigate if there's a reason why.
He's here, Detective Assey. Again, 514-790-0800. Your questions for Walter Assey, president of Renofco. But for now, it is 9:45. Time to check on the roads from our CJD Traffic Center. Here is Jill Fitzgerald. Jill. It's always a good time here with Walter Assey, president of Renofco. He continues to take your questions. 514-790-0800. That's our phone line. That is our text line. If you are texting, please remember to add your name. Speaking of names, we've got Steve, who's been waiting very patiently on the line. Steve, take it away.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Another person here who wants to put down a Dietra membrane to support a ceramic floor that is... linear looking wood type of floorboard. But my question is regarding self-leveling cement. Mm-hmm. Are we able to put that safely down in the areas that need it, or if it's needed anywhere, does the whole slab have to be sort of flooded with that?
Well, we don't flood the slab. The good thing with self-leveling cement that it does the job for you, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to do it strategically in areas where you know you have the dips and the valleys and the bumps and what have you, you can. But the idea is it does not, it would not stay on areas that it doesn't need to. So the wastage is very minimal. If you want to, especially if you're going to go with vinyl lats, it's very finicky, so you need to have a really level floor. Now, in the case of ceramic, because you're going with ceramic, the good thing with ceramic is you could also play with a cement glue. Mm-hmm. So when the tiler is tiling, he can also play with the level himself if needed. Okay. One of the things that you want to be very mindful of when you're doing self-leveling is how much self-leveling you're doing. Now, each manufacturer have different instructions. So it can start from all the way from 0.5 inch, and you can go all the way up to 2 inches. but most of them are between the half an inch and the 1 inch mark. So be very mindful of what you're buying and read the instructions adequately, because you don't want to over level with self leveling. It will actually deteriorate with time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we won't be putting down any a heated floor, so I think that takes out some complication, and then it's the competency and experience of the installer.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with cement glue and the tiler. If you have a good tiler, you can also do a lot of that work while we're doing the tiling. But I mean, doing the bit of self-leveling, especially in the areas that need it, is also a very good idea.
And in general, do you like the idea of a ceramic wood-looking floor as opposed to wood, so that if there isn't water again in the future, there's less likelihood of having to replace the floor?
It's a wonderful idea. Just be mindful it's a colder floor in the winter, and be mindful that you do need to have a very good quality dehumidifier in your basement with a hygrometer, so you can always monitor the level of humidity. Because the thing with basements, or the things with the humidity altogether, as soon as you pass the 55%, so you're going to 60%, 65% relative humidity, the ambient air itself will start creating mold spores. That's why in humid areas we have that musty smell.
Dew point is what you're talking about.
Voilà. Et voilà.
Okay, so, Steve. Oh, no, you're still? You.
No,
yeah, sorry.
So what I'm saying is it's great. It's very practical. It's hygienic. It does not smell, it does not decay, it does not contract, it does not expand. Just the dehumidification becomes really what you want to focus on.
Okay, thank you very much. You've been most helpful.
All right, Steve, have a
thank
great
you.
One.
You
okay, Joseph is writing in now on the text line. He says, hi, guys. My insurance company told me I have to install a sub pump in my basement. What does that involve? Is it an expensive and a big job? And can you recommend a tradesman that I can call?
So what you need is a plumber. There will be some breaking of cement. There will be some digging. The plumber can do that, or you could do that for the plumber if he's charging too much for it. But technically, what they might not do is repour the concrete around the pit. There is some digging because you want to install the pit. There's also the idea of where to install the pump. It's one thing to install it, it's where to install it. So that's a discussion that you have to have with the plumber.
Is it expensive?
I mean, it is a few thousand dollars. It's not tens of thousands. It's I would say 3,000. That would be the mark that is where it hovers at.
But if the insurance company is asking, will it help lower coverage?
Well, I mean, it will if they're asking.
Yeah.
And if they send it in a letter form, don't have a choice. You have
it's not
to
so
it.
Much of an ask as what
it's
you're saying.
It's like, just do it or else we're going to cancel you type of thing. So you have to do it if they're asking, especially if it's in a written format. Now, what that means is that he's probably in a higher table area and they want some type of system to evacuate the water from underneath the slab, all from the French drains around. It doesn't hurt to have it. It's probably a good thing. There's a reason why they're asking for it. That's pretty much the gist of it. It's a few thousand dollars. It has to be done.
And we did talk about this before, the city of Montreal. Talk about Renoplex here. Can Renoplex help with this?
Renoplex can help. I mean, the idea with it is anything that you do to kind of help the city's decaying infrastructure. I'm going to put it this way, because that's what it is.
politely saying that the city's falling apart.
You can get some type of a grant out of it. So definitely check in with the Renoflex program.
Okay, then there's somebody here. We have time for one last one. One quick one. Jimmy's nodding. Thank you for the info on the garage drain pipes. Our problem is that the cover has rusted after 35 years. Where can you buy a new cover? We've tried various hardware stores. A new cover for the garage drain pipes.
Don't go with the metal one. If you're going to buy a new cover, buy the PVC one. And you can find these even on Amazon. You don't necessarily need to go. There are specialty stores, like I think Nelco would sell it. But try Amazon as well.
Look, it's like the Oscars. They're playing us off. Walter Assey, president of Renovco. He'll be back next week to answer your questions. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll talk again next week. I'm back tomorrow. Take care.